Think big. Think positive. Never show any sign of weakness. Always go for the throat. Buy low, sell high. Fear, that's the other guy's problem. Nothing you have ever experienced can prepare you for the unbridled carnage you're about to witness. Right. Super Bowl, the World Series, they don't know what pressure is. In this building, it's either kill or be killed. Right. You make no friends in the pits and you take no prisoners.
No prisoners.
1 minute, you're up half a million in soybeans, and the next, boom, your kids don't go to college and they've repossessed your Bentley. Are you with me?
Hello and welcome to Turner's Take Podcast. I'm your host, Craig Turner, author of Turner's Take Newsletter, broker here at StoneX. We're in futures, options, and the OTC markets, which includes swaps and lookalikes and accumulators and the like. Also do cash consulting for end users and producers in the commodity markets. If you like Turner's Take Podcast, please go to iTunes and give us a review, preferably a good one. And if you know of anyone who might like the podcast, please send it along to them. Anyone can listen along. We do that so people get to know us if they want to work with us. If you want to check out the newsletter, you can go to turnerstake.com and look for the Turner's Take newsletter there. For clients, if you like what we're doing, you hear anything that you might want to get into or make adjustments, give me a call. My number is 312-706-7610. If you're not a client and you're interested in working with us, again, give us a call or shoot me an email. My email is craig.turner@stonex.com. So I just want to thank StoneX for sponsoring this podcast today. We're going to have some more sponsors as we go along from different departments and business units, and we'll talk about that later. But for right now, I want to get into the WASDE. We've got a WASDE. It's May 12th. See, today's the 7th on a Friday, so we got 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, so that's Wednesday, at 11 a.m. on next week. So a couple of things I want to get into. We're going to leave the macro markets alone for today, except for one thing. I am getting a lot of questions about inflation and how much does inflation play into the grain and commodity markets? And there is some. And, there's money flow that comes in from outside markets that traditionally wouldn't be here because a little bit of an inflation hedge. There's going to be inflationary pressures just from the printing of money and the stimulus and what's been going on in the central banks. But most of this gain has been from a supply and demand perspective. A being there have been supply issues in South America, and B being there's been a lot better demand over the past 9 months. Than there has been in a long time for multiple reasons. One, you got to remember we had a short crop 2 years ago when planting didn't go well and we were late. And then last year we didn't plant as many acres because the trade war was still going on. And also during those 2 years, we had African swine fever in China, which really reduced the hogs. So basically you had globally lower feed demand because of ASF and the problems that did in 18 and 19 into 20 and how long it took to recover. And let's not forget the tariff wars, where really for a lot of 18, 19, and starting into 2020, we just didn't have the demand that we used to. And during that time, China couldn't source all the commodities that they needed, especially from the United States. And they probably, even though they'll never tell you this, but it's hard to argue now when you look at prices, they probably chewed through a lot of their supplies as they were fighting that trade war with the United States. And then after it got done, they had to come back in and buy commodities with a vengeance. Plus the pent-up demand, now that we're coming out of coronavirus, knock on wood, with vaccines and things getting better. So you throw in all that stuff, low prices cure low prices, right? For the past couple of years, inflation is part of it, but it's more supply and demand than anything else. So I just want to touch on that real quick. If you disagree with me, that's fine. I don't hold all the answers here, but when I look at all the numbers, the majority of the move that we've seen has more to do with supply and demand. Not saying inflation isn't part of it. It's just not the biggest part of it. All right. So that's where we are. As for the WASDE report, okay, the May WASDE is traditionally a big WASDE. Why is the Mewazdi a big one traditionally? It's because it's the first month where the USDA shows us their supply and demand numbers for new crop in Mewazdi. They do show it in the ag form. There's also a 10-year baseline that they update once or twice a year, and they'll show some demand and supply numbers. And that kind of gives analysts and brokers and traders a bit of a guideline to kind of carry into as we go into major events. What's interesting about, and then what we really get to see is the first WASDE with new crop is the May WASDE. It will be interesting to see what the USDA does with South American production, particularly Brazil, second crop corn. How much will that come down? Will it come down 5 million metric tons? Will it be more? For example, I believe we were at 109 in April. I think the trade is looking for 103, so 6 million metric tons. I know StoneX, Arlen here, thinks it's going to be 100. I'm okay with 5 to 6 million tons coming off. Maybe eventually it does get to 100. I think sometimes some analysts put out numbers where they think we'll be at the end of the year, which I think is what Arlen and StoneX do. Other analysts try to play the report. Like, they may be more bullish or bearish on what the report's going to be, but they're trying to guess the WASDE, which is usually a bit more conservative. So I think a lot of analysts would probably think we did lose 9 million metric tons, but maybe the WASDE will only show 5 or 6. So sometimes you always got to, when you take a look at the WASDE estimates, it's always important to know which analysts treat it, different analysts treat it different ways, where we're eventually going to be and what the WASDE is going to show, the USDA is going to show. Anyone who's been in the game for a while knows what I mean. Like, the USDA is slow to make changes. So even if you think there's going to be a 10 million metric ton loss at the end, you know, when it's all said and done, the USDA starts off with 5 and then inches it down as it confirms the numbers, that kind of stuff. So that's one thing. Another thing that the USDA could look at into is for old crop, get the new crop in a minute, but for old crop, demand numbers, right? Demand has been very strong. China has been taking a lot of the corn in the export reports. Does the United States have to increase old crop exports, maybe by 50 or 100 million bushels? Do they have to increase ethanol a little bit? You can make the case that they could. So that's going to be interesting. And when you think about the old crop, last month old crop was at 1.35 billion. The trade thinks it could be 1.275 billion. For soybeans, we're expecting the same. You know, we're about 120 million for ending stocks for old crop soybeans. We're expecting it to be about the same for the WASDE, and same with wheat. So for old crop, the only thing that we're really looking for here, what the trade's looking for, is probably more demand coming out of the corn for old crop demand, and the old crop stocks getting going from, let's say, 1.35 to maybe 1.25, 1.26, 1.27, something like that. So that is what the trade will be looking for. I think soybeans will be tight no matter what. Wheat, I wouldn't be surprised if it was a little bit more bullish than the market was expecting, because we always look at the crop as what could be a bearish surprise, right? If the market's bullish, if everyone's long, and a lot of people are long, what's something that can be a curveball, you know, for that? And one of them's the wheat number. The wheat number could be better than expected because there is a lot more wheat being used for feed. And the USDA could say, hey, look at the Western Corn Belt. You know, usually, you know, when you're out in the Western Corn Belt, you know, the grain goes east on logistically to the river. Right now, the grain's going west to the feedlots, which is the wheat particularly. And the wheat basis is actually making the case has been the strongest of all out there recently. So maybe, and also we've seen that same trend around the world, China feeding more wheat, a lot more wheat being fed around the world because they just can't source corn or soybeans for the meal. To what extent, we'll just see, but I'm just saying that maybe that's priced in, maybe it's not. If there was going to be somewhat of a bearish surprise for corn, probably come into a bullish surprise for wheat. We'll see. We'll see what happens there. With new crop, corn and soybeans and wheat. There was no numbers in April because they didn't report on it. So when you don't have numbers from a WASD, you have your guesses, but there's nothing to go based on. And so you can get some pretty big misses in a May report because no one really knows what the USDA is going to say, what they're thinking. It's much easier, I think, to base your estimates of the WASD once you get that first WASD out there, because now you have the goalposts that they've set up for you. One of the reasons why the quarterly stocks report is so hard to guess is because it's only every 3 months. It's a lot easier to keep track of these things and see the trends when it's weekly, twice a month, or monthly. Corn average trade estimate for new crop is 1.3, which means one thing I'll say about new crop, the USDA, I'm almost positive by a rule, has to use the acres from the March 31st. Now, you can make the case since the March 31st report, which was planting as of March 1 intentions, we've gone up in corn, maybe at the expense of beans, maybe not, maybe just all the extra acres that got, you know, put in our corn. I don't think the USDA is going to show that. I don't think they can. I mean, they are a government agency and there are rules. There are some rules they have to follow for certain reports. They're not as dynamic as you may think. Or maybe that doesn't surprise you at all. But I think the 1.3, 1.4 billion carryout means we start off below a 10% stock to usage, which means we start off the year tight with no room for error. That is not the case last year, right? Last year we had a 2.5 billion or higher. And at one point we were talking about 3 billion corn that the USDA was showing. That may have been 18 months ago, but you know, before China started getting on their buying spree. But you know, here we are, we're starting off with no room for error. We need more acres, and the trend line yield of 179.5, that's not a given. I mean, we're still planting. The Western Corn Belt has dry parts. The Northern Plains certainly have dry parts. I mean, the Dakotas, the Dakotas could be losing some acres, probably soybean acres to spring wheat, maybe even corn too. Someone's buying acres. It's either going to be maybe it's the corn market up there, but it's so dry, I don't know how they're going to do it. You'd think it'd have to go to spring wheat. But regardless, there's dryness. We don't have supercharged soil moisture like we have in the past couple of years. I mean, for the past couple of years, the soil and subsoil ratings in the United States have been outstanding coming into planting, and that is not the case this year. So you get, we can be very sensitive to weather rallies, and we're already at 7 for old crop and above 6 for new crop. And it's May 7th. So there's some potential for some real volatility, both up and down. I mean, I know we all kind of, the bulls out there licking their chops there thinking about a weather market, but you get a big soaker in June, we could have a limit down day, right? So there are, it's going to be an interesting one, which is why I still like using options and spreads to kind of just control that risk and that volatility. But getting it, so 1.3, let's call it 1.35 for the average estimate for corn. I've seen the estimates for ending stocks for new crop as low as 1.1 and as high as 1.6. Those 1.6 or anything above 1.5 is definitely firms that are saying we're going up in acreage, which maybe for this WASD is not correct, but going forward it might. And like I said, some analysts and firms out there aren't doing it based on what their estimates, what they think is going to happen on May 12th. It's where they think things really are right now, and there are more acres going in. So something to keep in mind. For soybeans, the ending stocks start off at 138 million. I've seen ranges between basically 100 and 200 million. For the analysts that I respect, it's almost year over year, no change, like 120 or something like that. And I all these analysts are good, but the guys who, so I shouldn't say there's some I don't respect, but some of the analysts out there are just better than others and have been doing it longer than others. And I can tell just by when they put out their reports, who really knows what they're doing and who might be not as experienced. And I think a lot of those guys think that year over year, new crop is going to be basically 120. And then we're going to start off next year exactly where, start off this year exactly where we are now, which means beans in the teens continue, right? Now, we'll see what the USDA says, even if, you know, the best analysts that I think in the industry, you know, can be wrong, especially on the May WASDE, because no one's seen new crop numbers yet. You don't know what the USDA is also seeing. It's not just about the US, it's about foreign trade. You know, where acres may be expanding for the next year can affect how many exports we have for this year and next year. There's just a lot of moving parts there. But it does look like soybeans are going to stay just as tight this year as they are now, this year and next year. And wheat gets tighter. A lot of analysts, because of the lower acres and the higher demand, each year, usually the wheat, we've been worried 3 years ago, 2 years ago, ending stocks for all wheat were a billion. And that's, you know, and it was, we had so much wheat, it was crazy. And what happens is we started having acres where we're just not planting enough acres, even with a trend line yield, to not draw down on stocks. So we lose about 50 to 100 million bushels off ending stocks year over year by just keeping acres where they are the same, right? Until we get to a point where prices get better. So is that this year now? I mean, because wheat is now going to be about 730 on and can range between 650 and 840. Still a lot of wheat. It's not a ridiculous number, right? You know, if we're at 700 million carryout and we were at a billion carryout a couple of years ago, and that's a significant drop. And all of a sudden, when you have wheat starting to get 600 million all wheat, you know, 600-700 million all wheat in bushels and carryout, you can start using those old price comparisons where, you know, wheat would trade 1.5 times over corn and that kind of stuff. Not this year because corn's just so tight. But if corn should eventually get back to more of a normal supply and demand market, there really should be a healthier premium of wheat over corn if ending stocks still keep on coming down like this year over year. Keep this in mind too. If, you know, we're at 850 million on the wheat carryout for old crop, next year we'll be around 750. If we don't change the acres again and they just stay the same, we'll be at 650. All right. So we're just going to keep, you know, with trend line yields, we're going to probably just trim 100 million bushels every year in wheat until wheat gets high priced enough where it can compete with corn and soybeans for acres. So just think about that. On where the trends are going there. As far as the world carryout, for old crop, we're looking for a draw for corn. We're looking for soybeans to stay the same. We're looking for wheat to stay the same. So basically, I think with the world carryout, if we lose 4 million metric tons or 5 million metric tons in corn production for old crop, I think that has got to do more with Brazil and the losses that they're seeing there right now, because that would be part of this marketing year. For the world carry out for 21-22, huge ranges, anywhere from 270 to 295 for soybeans, 78 to 94 for wheat, 283 to 302. So those are big ranges. You know, for corn, we're probably looking for around 285, 283, a little bit of a bump year over year. Same with soybeans, a bit of a bump, and wheat staying constant. The market usually doesn't get crazy about new crop world carryouts in terms of pricing unless it's a huge miss, but it's something we'll definitely keep an eye on because it is going to make a difference in the international export trade. And then finally, they'll update us on the South American production. So in my email, I will send out the USDA WASDE snapshot and estimates. All right, I'll put it in the show notes, the numbers I just talked about. It's a good guide for where we, you know, when you're looking at the report when it comes out. It can be very volatile for corn and soybeans, even wheat, depending on the big miss, if there's a huge miss. But there is a lot of risk heading into this report. On the spec side of this report, what we usually do, when I've been, you know, since 2007, when I switched over from the equity world into the commodity world, first 6 or 7 years as, you know, after college, I actually spent on the equity side of things. And since 2007 until today, I've been on the commodity side. Whenever a WASDE has come up, the first question any kind of trader around me used to say is, how is the market positioned? Are they long? Are they short? Is it neutral? I think anyone listening to this podcast will agree that the market's very long, And then the next question would be, all right, if what could be, if everyone's on one side of the boat, therefore, usually the biggest move is the surprise. In this case, what's the surprise? It would be a bearish surprise of all the spec flank is mostly on the long side. And then what could happen? Like what could happen to make this a bearish surprise? Probably would be the USDA not decreasing South America enough. The USDA maybe not for new crop. I guess they could inch up acres. I don't think they can. They could show demand maybe not as strong for new crop, saying that there'll be other grain planted all over the world because of high prices and will bring not just acres out in the United States, but in South America and Europe and Ukraine, Russia, Australia, China, wherever. They can make that case. You know, they could say that do something with residual, you can do something with ethanol, they can do something on the feed side. They could show feed wheat be a lot bigger than people think. So am I saying this is what I think is gonna happen? No. But what I am saying is that there are ways that the USDA could have a bear surprise. And if they do, you know, what does that mean? You know, could it be a limit down day if we get a real bear surprise after running up so much and everyone's so long? We could. So on the spec side, if I were going to take a lottery ticket, I probably would look at some short dated new crop calls or maybe look at the July weeklies. Not calls, puts. I'd be looking at the puts. You know, just if I'm very long, like if I already have a big position, or I'm a farmer, I have a ton of new crop that I haven't sold yet. I could, you know, short term, if I'm a farmer, I have a ton of new crop that I haven't sold yet, and we're worried about a bear surprise, you can look at the, you know, the June short dated call puts on short dated for the new crop. You could, if you're a speculator, go ahead and look at the weekly Julys in corn and soybeans, right? And I guess that'd be the way. If you want to play the long side, you'd probably have to buy call spreads. I don't love the. We could easily be limited up Wednesday, okay? But considering just how much we've come up and how expensive the call side of the market is right now, I guess, you know, I'd be more looking. We've been so bullish for a while here. I'm actually looking for ways to reduce my risk heading into this WASD instead of, you know, getting long. Now, if you are a trader and you want to work with us, or you want to take positions, and you currently have an account with us, I'd say we can always take a little bit of a lottery ticket just in case of a bear surprise. My bias is still bullish on these grain markets, but, you know, trading is about timing and trade location too. For more of the medium to longer term stuff, I kind of, as long as the WASD isn't a huge, you know, bearish surprise, I like buying the dips still. And if you're a client here or want to be a client here and go over how we're going to do that, let me know. I still like bean oil a lot. I'll talk about bean oil at the end for a little bit. And if I'm a farmer, I'm looking to get rid of old crop, replacing them with some call spreads, right? Just because I know there's a fear of missing out. Or if you're already sold and you want to, you know, no one wants to miss out on higher prices or going the next leg higher. Like what if we go back to $8 again in corn? Like I get it. You can always buy call spreads. Sell some put spreads to finance it, to do those type of things. As far as new crop goes, honestly, I'm at the point where it's like, you know, if you want to sell new crop when it goes above 650, we're not that far away. You might as well just start buying 650 calls. You get it in there, and then you can either use it as a spread, or you can just pony up the money. And then whenever the grain, cash grain gets that high, you can sell it. You still got the 650 call. That is a nice way to do it for the producer at this point. Some guys are interested in building floors. There is, if some farmers sell new crop, like in June and July, there are some interesting July short-dated put option strategies where you can build a floor for a reasonable amount of money and still keep the upside open. So if you're interested in that, give me a call and let me know if you're client here, you just want to, or you're interested in working with us, I'm happy to talk to you about that too. So last thing on bean oil, I think vegetable oil and bean oil, I talked about this a little bit in the newsletter last week or this week, could be a little bit like the new corn for ethanol, like bean oil for biodiesel or vegetable oil for biodiesel could be a little bit like the 2007, 2008 and the Renewable Fuel Standard Act, when corn was basically corn, you know, food for energy, corn for ethanol. You know, back then that was just a U.S. deal with corn for ethanol, and the ethanol industry has grown around the world. But what we've really seen too is basically vegetable oil for biodiesel and as a replacement for petroleum products for manufacturing of plastics and particularly rubber. So we're seeing this, we're seeing not only is the world getting larger, right? So there, the vegetable oil, there is a food component demand that's been growing. There is the, also the world is getting wealthier as time marches on, as technology advances. So the protein demand goes up. And again, that puts a strain on basically the oil seeds, you know, because they are crushed for the feed. Then that helps demand on that in that complex. We have basically vegetable oil for biodiesel, which to me globally, in terms of like a worldwide trend, reminds me of the corn for ethanol trend that we saw in the United States during those 5 years when we were trying to get ethanol, which eventually saw when we tried to get the ethanol and successfully got the ethanol industry up and running in the United States, which now it uses about 5 billion bushels a year of corn, nearly a third of all production. And finally, we've got the industrial products, where there are products like rubber or other industrial products that use petroleum, and can vegetable oil be a substitute for that? So I like soybean oil. I know for a while I've been saying it's been more of an old crop deal, and I like the old crop. I got to tell you, after doing a lot more research on it, and it's not easy to get research, by the way, on vegetable oil. It's, you can find it, but it's not in the traditional places where you think it would be. There's a lot of specialty groups that get on it. It costs a little bit of money to get access to some of this information. And when you look into it, like I have been saying that old crop at 70, it starts to make sense for Argentina, pencils to import soybean oil into the United States, maybe around 70. But you start to look at like December, like in the mid to high 50s, and some of the 2022 contracts, which are, in the 50s. I don't think this is just an old crop story. This could be a new crop story too for global vegetable oil. Now, supply and demand is going to come into effect, and we'll have to see how the canola crop does and the sunflower crop does and palm and plus soybean. But soybean oil could be a bigger story than we originally thought, instead of just like this year thing. It could be a multi-year story. So I will be looking into that too. And I know we've done a lot of spec trading in soybean oil, and kind of stopped with the July contracts. But I think there could be a lot of value in December and into the 2022. So we will be looking into that too. So that is going to wrap it up for the podcast, mostly on the WASDE, because the May WASDE is that big. If you are on the commercial side or producer side, end user side, and you work with me, give me a call and we'll just see where the risk lies for either your positions on the board, or probably more importantly, what you either have in storage or what you haven't sold yet in new crop. And that's probably the latter. Most people have sold everything in corn, or if they haven't sold it, they have some calls against it. And then from the spec side, I don't know. I mean, the lottery ticket is always to the opposite side of where the market is positioned. So that would be the bear side, just as a general rule. So that's where we are. Everyone have a great weekend. I will be talking about the WASDE next week. If you need anything, let me know. My number is 312-706-7610. My email address is craig.turner@stonex.com. We do futures. We do options. We do OTC lookalikes. We can do HRIs and forward contracting now in the market. Accumulators, cash consulting for end users and processors. So check out Turner's Take. Have a great week, everyone. Thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you later.
This material is conveyed as a solicitation for entering into a derivatives transaction. This material has been prepared by a Daniel's Trading Broker who provides research market commentary and trade recommendations as part of his or her solicitation for accounts and solicitation for trades. Daniel's Trading, its principals, brokers, and employees may trade in derivatives for their own accounts or for the accounts of others. Due to various factors such as risk tolerance, margin requirements, trading objectives, short-term versus long-term strategies, technical versus fundamental market analysis, and other factors, such trading may result in the initiation or liquidation of positions that are different from or contrary to the opinions and recommendations contained therein. Past performance is not necessarily indicative of future performance. The risk of loss in trading futures contracts or commodity options can be substantial, and therefore, investors should understand the risks involved in taking leveraged positions and must assume responsibility for the risks associated with such investments and for their results. You should carefully consider whether such trading is suitable for you in light of your circumstances and financial resources. You should read the risk disclosure accessed at www.danielstrading.com. Daniel's Trading is not affiliated with, nor does it endorse any trading system, newsletter, or similar service. Daniel's Trading does not guarantee or verify any performance claims made by such systems or services.